So as Chris said, my name is Lissa. I am not originally from Cold Lake, but moved here in grade 10. I did youth on Wednesdays with Sarah, and Corrine was one of my leaders as well. So haven't been here in a while, but it feels like it. It really does. No, it's so good to be back. Yep, I am 26. I am an LPN. I work in between four different cities, so I tend to keep pretty busy and tend to keep on the go. Up until, October of last year, I was in Edmonton. I was working, and I had a plan. I was like, all right, I've got my career. I know kind of where I want to be in the next 5 years. I know what that looks like, and here's what it's going to take for me to get there. So here's what I'm going to do. And as the old saying goes, if you want to make God laugh, you tell him your plans. Because as soon as I had made that plan that this is what I'm doing, it fell apart. Not because it was a bad plan, because it was great. It was productive, and it led me towards some of the goals that I want to achieve for my life. But it was just God had other plans, and he had other things for me. I heard about Justice Semester through the church, and I had been looking into traveling. And so I said, you know what, I'll pray about this, I'll think on this, and if this is what God has for me, then doors are going to open that I can't close, and we're going to walk them. So basically, long story short, I was too old. I had missed the deadline for applying by probably a month and a half, 2 months. Like, I applied in the middle of October, and we were leaving in January, which for an international three-month stint, that's a lot of paperwork, a lot of things like that. And I didn't have the finances. I was going, how the heck am I going to fundraise this amount of money in 2.5 months before I have to go? And so it was just a lot of big obstacles that I went, you know what, I don't know how this is going to happen, but if it's going to happen, God's going to make it happen. Sure enough, all the money came in, all of the paperwork went through, my visas came in, no problem, and so I went. And it was me and six other participants from all around Canada. There was six of us from Alberta and the one of us from Ontario, so they were great. And what we were doing basically was, it's classified as an exposure trip. So we go when we are in Phuket, Thailand, which is a beautiful, beautiful tropical area of Phuket Island in Thailand. And we were involved with For Freedom International, the ministry that is responsible for vocational schools that help. There's a bakery school and there's a hairstyling school for getting people out of the red light district. How many of you know or have heard of the red light district and what it is? Okay, do you want to kind of tell me a little bit about what people do in the Red Light District or why it's there? Do you know? Okay, that's fine. So the Red Light District basically in its essence is a, the street name for it or street cred is the sex trade, basically. So it's where people can go and they can set a set of prices for certain services, and depending on what you want, you negotiate and you determine the type of experience that you want to have from there. It is not something that we hear a lot about over in our part of the world. Asia is very, very different from North America. North America here, we are very individualistic. We are very guilt innocence driven. So we don't do things because we don't want to get in trouble from the law. You don't want to have your criminal record, have a smudge on it and then be at a loss from opportunities. In Asia, it's very shame honor. You don't just represent yourself, you represent your family, and that will determine basically how you're known as a group will determine the opportunities that you have over there in Asia. Asia is also very, very open to religion, whereas in Canada, as long as you don't offend anybody and as long as you say the nice things, anything goes. In Asia, that's not the case. Thailand is primarily Buddhist. So with that, they are very peaceful and honoring. So if you go up to someone and say, can I pray for you? That's not out of the usual for them. They're used to going to monks to get blessings. They are used to, there's a lot of spiritual openness. They have spirit houses on their properties, which basically you put a spirit house on your property so that bad spirits won't come and attack your business, won't come attack your family. And basically, you try to appease them by giving them their own accommodation. So they're very, very open and very, very aware that spiritual activity is out there. And that was probably one of the biggest shocks about Asia. One of the things that was so impactful for me about this trip was you just get to experience not just the way God works and intercedes, but the love of God for people in different settings and in different mentalities. Over in Asia, and I guess it's starting to make its way over here now, a little bit more mainstream, is the law or the thought of karma. And basically what happens is, under a karmic law, you are paying for the sins of your past at the same time as trying to put down a deposit going forward, hoping that you'll come back better in the next life. Over here in North America, we have this cute little, oh, someone hurt my feelings, I hope someone gets them, and karma will get you. And that's great. What we don't tend to realize, and where the downside with that is that, you know, when someone gets you, it's really easy to go, oh, you know what, someone's coming for you. It'll happen, don't worry. But then as soon as we're in the wrong, oh, no, like, I know, I want mercy. I don't want the full extent of that consequence. And that is basically how it works in Thailand. And that is one of the things that fuels the red light district so heavily. So basically what happens is, Thailand, a lot of it is what they call parental compliance. So what that means is they will have a daughter, or they will have a certain instance or occasion happen in their life. They're not very rich people. It's not a very well-off nation. So with it being shame honor, you look out for your family, and that responsibility often falls to the oldest daughter. So what will happen is, as in most families, if something happens, you know, where you need money, or if you're short of it, you go to a loan shark that has silly, stupid rates of interest that you have to pay back on that loan. So what they'll do is they'll take out this loan from the loan shark, and if they don't have a child or if they have a daughter already, they will... it is implied in their mind that this is just your karma. This is what is meant for you to do. You're meant to serve and honor your family. We're going to have you in this trade, basically to provide and to keep that money coming in. I was able to go, in the red light district for, you do outreach every now and then on Patong Beach, and we do one exposure trip down in Pattaya. And, you know, you talk to some of these women that are able to get by in enough English, and you ask, you know, do you like what you do here? Are you happy with this? Many of them, all but one said, no, I want to go home. I miss my kids. I miss my family. And it is just so devastating to see the situations that people put themselves in trying to pay off for something that they don't even remember, they think they did, that they don't remember doing, and trying to put on the, you know, safe face, trying to work towards something better for the next life. And it was just so absolutely unreal to see God show up in those ways that are absolutely, you don't see hope. Less than 2% of Thailand is Christian. And while I was there, between the two classes, we had seven people. We had one ladyboy, which is very prominent in Thailand. And so ladyboy is the equivalent here of transgender type. And she was doing hair, and absolutely fantastic. They all ended up coming to faith. Basically what happens there is you get to see how they pay their students to come, because if you don't pay the students to come, they're not going to come work for free. They need money to support their families. So they come into the schools, we teach them a trade so that when they're done, they can go out, earn their own income, and basically become self-sufficient, so they have less risk of falling back into that lifestyle. And then we also get to live in community with them. And they just kind of get to see, you know, what a Christian circle looks like and what a circle of love looks like. And so to be able to go from a narrow perspective of North America that I had always had, and to go to a completely different mentality, a completely different temperature, cuisine, everything, and just see how Jesus is literally the same in all cultures, contexts, and societies was absolutely phenomenal. To see the love that he has for people and for people in destitute situations was something that was insane. And then the impact that that had on my life is something that I couldn't put a price tag on. And to be honest with you, I can't put how valuable it is to me in words. You know, you guys are so young. I know that you probably hear that all the time. And I remember being in your age, sitting there listening to people going, oh, I know. Like, you're old, what do you know? I get it. Don't tell me how to live my life. But if there's one thing that I could just encourage you with is you will never be able to love someone more than you trust them. And so as Chris was saying, you know, giving a year to God, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you know, you can say to that mountain, go from here to there and it will. I think that's such beautiful imagery of giving God your little and letting him come through in for you in ways that you never imagined and in ways that you never expected. Because to be honest, I'm 26, next to nothing in my life has gone as I expected it to. You know, it all looks good on paper, and it's not that they're bad things, but at the end of the day, God's plan's gonna come forth. And it is, if you are willing to abide in him and give him that lordship, it is the most beautiful thing that I've ever experienced. And that says a lot from just situations that I've come from. And it takes time, you know. I don't think that Thailand or an overseas experience like that is for everyone. And if you're one of those people that you're like, nope, I've got my plan and it's falling into place, that's great. But for the majority of us that, you know, we're kind of like, okay, the end's coming near, I have no idea what I'm doing, always just remember that at the end of the day, you have a God that loves you. You have a God that has his best interest for you and that he has a plan for you. And really, guys, I know it sounds like a long time. Giving a year to God is not that long. It's really not. And the things that by giving him that little, what he will give back and the foundation that that will set for your life, I am so thankful that this experience happened when I was 26 and not at 67. But it took a little bit, you know. I had a position for work lined up. That fell through. I had a living accommodation in Edmonton. I've always wanted to live in Edmonton, live in the city. I had everything I thought I wanted, and I wasn't content with it. I just went, okay, there's got to be something more. And at that time, my personal relationship with God was pretty distant. But in that, he still pursued me. And in pursuing me, he took my perspective of, basically took my eyes off myself, where it was, you know what, God, this isn't working for me, and made it less about my comfort and more about his glory, and in the very best way possible. So out of anything that I could encourage, God's love is definitely unfathomable, and if you're willing to give him a year, he's going to show you some really cool things. I think that's all I got. Does anyone have any questions? And if not, that's okay too. If they have it really well regulated and things like that, I don't actually know of a time that I felt scared, if I'm honest with you. I felt safer walking down the streets of Thailand at night than I do walking down these streets at home. I mean, I guess scary thing in terms of that was in Pattaya, which is the sex trade capital of the world. There are a very shallow estimate is that there are, if you take the combination of the Greater Vancouver area and the city of Toronto, combine those two together, that is a 60% conservative estimate of people who go there specifically for the red light district. And that's only based on hotel rooms per hour. That's not based on people who come for, you know, more than the 1 hour in that hotel room. So getting ready to go down Beach Road and Walking Street in Pattaya was something else. One thing that I'm really thankful for prior to going over to Thailand was I do a lot of work in the psychiatric ward here. So I'm used to seeing things that we would describe as weird or odd or downright scary. So going there, I think I was pretty well prepared for the emotional heaviness of it. What I wasn't prepared for was you look at these people and you expect, I expected to see something different. I don't know what I was expecting to see. Like, people have got two eyes, two ears, and a mouth, but they look like normal people. And, you know, you see a lot of older gentlemen. There's a lot of couples that are starting to make that tour together. And the thing that I think that got me the most was seeing how they look normal on the outside, but when you look in their eyes, it's just this blank expression. Guys, we are really, really good at keeping ourselves comfortable and not going to those deep issues and those deep places because we're too ashamed, they hurt too much, or we feel hopeless about them. And if that is one thing that hit me the most about Thailand is that no situation is hopeless without God, no matter how desolate it looks to us. You know, to have seven people come and say, you know, I choose Jesus. I love Jesus because of the love that he has shown through you guys. And remember, it's shame, honor. You are turning away from your family. You basically are willing to give up a lot of your social standing to believe in the name of Jesus when you are... We like to live in this society where, you know, all religions point to the same God, but at the core of every religion's exclusivity is they have this exclusivity that agree with me or don't. So for someone in Asia to say, I believe in Jesus and I don't believe that Buddha is the way, that is basically like throwing your standing out. So it was huge. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I struggled the most with was the concept of so many underage people being put into going to the red light district to make money, whether it was by choice, whether it wasn't. What we often saw, if you're out in the night markets, it's very vivacious, it's loud, it's cultural, there's music, there's food, there's dancing, it's incredible. But one of the things that you saw with that is when the music and dancing is out, you see a lot of grooming of little girls that are either with, I'm assuming, were their parents or with older siblings or someone older, and they're coaching them, you know, how to get people's attention, how to move, how to look. And the part that burned like an iron in the back of my mind was, these are kids. You're supposed to be out playing. You're supposed to be out growing and eating dirt and experience, like, and I mean eating dirt, like kids as young as like 2 to 4. You're tiny, you're little. You're not meant to bear the responsibility of your family and this past debt that, well, because you had a bad past life, now you're going to come and pay it forward and you're going to take care of us. And what they tell their girls when they're in there is that if you do a good job making my life comfortable, when your kids come or when the next one comes after you, it'll be their job to make you comfortable. Suffer well is literally one of their slogans. So that was really, really hard to rationalize and to not lose my cool with that. A lot of it is not maliciously planned. Like, it's not one of those things where you're this worthless, terrible human being. They love their children in the ways that they know how. A lot of it is cultural or generational sin, where it's all they know. If that's all you've seen, that's all you know how to rationalize. Kind of like here in North America, we value education, or we value, you know, being able to make an honest living. Kind of the same thing over there. That's what they understand. One of the concepts that was told to us is, if you love your daughter, you sell her clothes, because then at least she's home at the end of the night. If not, or if there's an estranged relationship, then you can send her away and she can make you more money to support you. So what was the question? Oh, yes. And so there's a couple of different reasons for that. There are some areas, like Isan is the northern region of Southeast Asia. It's not just Thailand. It's Cambodia, Malaysia. There's a couple of different countries up there. So they do it strictly because they're poor. Because if they don't, there's not a lot of alternative for them. The economics in Thailand is a little bit more sticky. You have to have a grade 9 education to get a minimum wage paying job. So to go work at 7-Eleven, you have to have a pass grade 9. It's getting better from what we know, but a lot of them up until this point don't have that education. And then the other part of it is a lot of them are done through coercion or deceit. So what they'll say is, oh, well, I have an uncle or I have a family member up in some different province. They need a maid, they need a cook, they need a nanny, they need something. And then what happens is, they either go up to find that there never was a job and they're trafficked into there. That's actually less common. You know, you hear trafficking and you hear this, or you, at least I did, imagine this, yeah, this kidnapping, you know, washed out van with nothing, and you're hauling someone in, you never see them again. That's not usually how it goes. Usually it's slow coercion. So you're brought on as a nanny or a waitress or brought into a shop. And then, well, I'm your nanny. It's probably just easier if you just, you know, stay in the room in the basement and we'll just pay your room and board, you work for us, and it's fine. And eventually that slow grooming starts to take place and you build trust, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, hey, well, I have a friend, and if you meet this friend and if he likes you and you do what he wants, then he'll give you a certain amount of money to send home. And then eventually it's really, yeah, there is no glamorized prostitution or sex work. you know, a lot of girls get into it because we think of Vegas when we hear of Sin City, and we think of, like, you know, the lights, the dazzle, the limousines, the big wigs with the tuxedos or the pretty dresses, and it might start that way. The allure of it is always there, but I think that when it comes to sin, if it looked as disgusting as what it is, no one would do it. There's always an allurement to it at the beginning. And so whether it's from greed, whether it's from desperation and not knowing where your next meal or where your next set of money is going to come from, there's a bunch of different reasons why. And so it's this big pot of gross, sticky confusion that Satan's got his hands in. So Buddhism is actually one of those really interesting religions where they don't believe that there is a God. They believe that when it comes to the suffering and the answer of who you are, your whole goal is to achieve eternal enlightenment. And by achieving eternal enlightenment, you basically learn to deny yourself, deny your feelings, deny all of those things, while at the same time embracing all of the positive energies, the good karma, and living a good life and paying into that next life. So to me, I actually found it a little bit confusing because I went, if I'm meant to deny myself entirely, how do I as a nothing come back? Wrapping my head around it, I've really struggled with it. But the way that the main concepts of Buddhism feed into it is just falls back to that suffer well. Whatever you got from your past life is coming for you now. You have what you deserve, and there's not a lot of mercy. So you see a lot of homeless people, and that's very shameful in Thailand. You don't beg because that's basically disgracing your face. It's brutal. It's very much, you're paying for the sins of yesterday that you don't remember what you did, and you try to suffer well in hopes that if you suffer well in your next life, you'll come back and won't have to suffer like that the next time.
So basically, Buddhism takes the guilt of selling your own daughter away.
Mm-hmm. One of the best things that I took away from this trip was that at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what culture you come from, what language you speak, who you identify with as your family. At the end of the day, we as people all have the same heart, and we all have the same core longings. It manifests in different ways. We all have different talents and temperaments and personalities. But at the end of the day, we are all looking for purpose and meaning, and why am I even here? Why does this matter? Because if it doesn't, at the end of the day, eat, drink, and be merry, right? And so when it comes to that, realizing that as much as it's awful to see what's happening in Asia, it's just as hurtful and dirty and broken back home. We are all the same people. We just manifest our sins differently. And at the end of the day, I feel that, and I've seen that Jesus and bringing that love and that redeemer and sanctifying qualities is the only coherent logical answer that answers all of the questions, why am I here, why does this matter, and is the only true hope in terms of suffering. Because if you look at, I just use Buddhism because I was there, again, suffer well, deny yourself. It doesn't justify why this is happening. It's just a matter of this is happening, and once you learn to just accept the fact that this is the way it is, you will not suffer as bad anymore. But it doesn't give the answer as to why. And that's one thing where I feel like Christianity has really, it's every avenue that I've looked down is truth just rings out. You know, it all makes sense. We have an enemy that doesn't want what's best for you, that wants to cripple you, whether that's here in Asia or here in Canada or over there in Asia. But in that, we have a hope, and we have a God that loves us and that gives us that purpose. And it's not just a matter of opinion or, because, I mean, you can get back and forth in those word fights all day. And yeah.
Thank you. That's a great explanation. Yeah.
I actually have a story that was kind of touches on that. So one of the things that we do while we're there for Valentine's Day is we would go and we give out cookies to the girls that are working, and it's very obvious which ones are working. And so we go up to them and we just give them these cookies, these heart-shaped cookies that has a Bible verse, our phone information or a phone number if they want more information about our schools, and an emergency contact number if, you know, they're ever in trouble and if they ever kind of need someone to vouch for them. And we went up to this one girl, and one of the things that was kind of hard about Thailand is they obviously don't speak English. But we went with a translator and gave this girl who was up on the bar, we gave her some cookies, and she's like, well, no, it's free. You don't owe us anything because they're very transactional in Asia. And she goes, well, like, why are you giving me these? Like, I don't understand. And we just said, you know, like, Jesus loves you. We love you. We just want to take a couple of minutes just to say that, you know, we think you're beautiful. We think you're worthy. And we just hope that you're okay and that you always know that you have someone if something goes wrong. And we just hope that you have a good night. And guys, I'm not even kidding. She's in like mini skirt, high heels, and she's full makeup, full hair, and she's bawling her eyes out on the tabletop of this bar. And we, you know, are you okay? What's going on? And she goes, why would anyone love me? You know, after all that. And it's interesting because you don't need to tell someone that that the red light district is wrong. They feel it. The guilt and anger and shame that comes away from both the people purchasing and the people selling, unreal. No one, that's their culture. That's what is expected and that's what you do. But they all have this universal sense of, I'm degraded, I'm ugly, I'm worthless, I'm this, I'm that. And so just to hear that there is this God and just these people that are willing to come and love her for a few minutes out of her night, and that's taking away an opportunity for money. Like, so that's also another thing you don't do, is take away someone's opportunity for wealth. And basically the analogy that we gave her was what Jesus promises to us, where he takes your sins, gives you his glory and his perfectness, and he took that on himself. And that there is no sin that you can commit as a human that is beyond that rescue and that love of God. And I know that, I think she called for more information about the school. I don't know what ever turned up with that. And that's one thing that's also hard too, is they'll call, but it's a slow process because you have to earn their trust where trust has been broken and mutilated for so, so long. But it was just so amazing to see how the love of Jesus through a simple act of cookies, you guys, was enough to really hit home for someone who had never probably even heard of home or felt home. Yeah, I think the big challenge coming back home, when you're over there and you're with a Christian community that has the same goal, we called it the mountaintop experience. You know, you're going there to experience God, you're going there to see what God is going to do, not just in your life, but in the lives of the people that you're going to serve. And it's wonderful for a season. It's one of those things where there are always ways to get involved, and it definitely puts the fire under you to want to serve and to want to get involved. But at the end of the day, day-to-day life is still pretty monotonous. Like, unless you're one of those true few that goes into, like, there's a ministry over there that goes and, like, hustles girls off the bar tables to get them away from, like, pimps and stuff. It's insane. But unless you get one of those, like, adrenaline rush jobs, your day-to-day life is not this super high experience, I guess. And so it was coming back going, you know, where do I see God in my day-to-day, knowing that this is happening in Asia, and how do I reconcile that to, I was born in North America, privileged, and I didn't have to experience that. Well, why? Why me and why not someone else? And so that was one of the things that I worked through. A lot of it, surprisingly, was doubt. You know, I came home and I went, like, I just got on my plane to go like 20 minutes ago. How am I back already? And I started to have those moments of, like, did that really happen? Was that just like, you know, a good time 3 months away from my everyday thing, and I got to go see some cool stuff, but like, did God actually really do anything? And it's so interesting how, for me, the fear and the doubt are the two biggest things that Satan knows how to prey on, especially on in a society where we are very purpose and purpose depression driven, you know? Without your purpose, you become depressed. And so it was just that was an adjustment. But one thing I'm super thankful for, and especially with that they've done really well with at Just a Semester, is your debrief coming home. We had 2 weeks of just getting ready to come home, of things you're going to face, how to combat that. Basically, when the lies are coming, you don't want to wait till the storm comes to get ready, because if that happens, you're gone. So they did a really good job of getting us ready to come back, but there is definitely still the fear and doubt of coming home, I think.
All right, thanks, Lissa.